It must be football season in Texas. This is Game Day with Jeff Ward on News Radio 1080 KRLD. Every Friday night, get an insider's look at college football with a Texas twist. From big matchups and exclusive interviews to expert analysis and accurate odds. Everything a Texas football fan needs. Game Day with Jeff Ward right now on News Radio 1080 KRLD. Powered by Uber Eats.
Hey, welcome to Game Day. I'm Jeff Ward, and wherever you are in Texas, thanks for listening. This is a show about the storylines of the games, the players, and the coaches of the programs you care about, and the best football state in the country. So here's what's ahead. I'll give you my Game Day power ranking 1 through 5. By the way, it was a good week for the top teams. In fact, there's a team in Lubbock that is shooting up the poll. We'll talk about the first of a couple of what I call Separation Saturdays. I think there might be 2 or 3 of these during the year, but we're at that point now where this is the first Separation Saturday. These are big games that can keep teams in position at the top of the league or start to make it nearly impossible to challenge for a league championship or a playoff berth. Texas Tech, SMU, and A&M all have Separation Saturday games. We'll talk about the very unexpected look of the Big 12 at the top. I'll break down the teams, the coaches, and players this weekend most under pressure. Then we'll finish up with some predictions.
Now, the Game Day Power Index, powered by Kia of Fresco.
I really thought I'd be saying all 5 had won and there's no change, but Texas State screwed that up. SMU had another blowout and might be the hottest team in this state at this time. A team from Lubbock is finding themselves. I like it a lot. So let's start with the top 5. I'm taking Texas State out. You can't lose 2 in a row, and you certainly can't lose to Sam Houston. They're out. I'll put TCU in. I don't know how we can find a way to put a TCU team in a poll that gave up 66 points, but I'm going to do it just because I'm kind of mad at Texas State. They blew it. So at number 5, I'm going to put 2-2 TCU in. They should have a big week, big win over the weekend. They get a bad Houston team, so I feel comfortable we can leave them there starting next week. Number 4, case might be made they should be 3 or 2, but we'll stay at 4 for now. SMU. SMU blew out Florida State in Dallas last week. The 3-point loss they had to BYU is hanging over their head, but it turns out that's a pretty good BYU team. This SMU team is on fire right now. Just ask Florida State. They've now scored 66 points and 42 points on consecutive weeks. They've got a huge, this is why I'm calling it Separation Saturday, they've got a huge game this weekend against number 22 Louisville. SMU is chasing Miami in the ACC, so this is a big game on the road. It is a Separation Saturday game, 1 of the 3. Number 3 in the poll, they have life. And now they're at the top of the Big 12 for now. That's Texas Tech. Remember, we left them for dead a few weeks ago when they were blown out on the road by Washington State. They are now at 4-1 and making some noise and feeling pretty good about themselves. They beat Cincinnati. People might say only by 3, but Cincinnati's not bad. They beat Cincinnati by 3 in Lubbock. This week, though, get this, they have a 10 p.m. game in Tucson. That's dangerous. That's a pretty good Arizona team. And number 2, they've mastered 2/3 of the game. I'll say that for the Aggies. The Aggies need to play in AT&T Stadium more often. They own Arkansas in AT&T Stadium. Their 4-point win this past weekend is now the 9th. Get this, 9th time A&M has beaten Arkansas in Arlington. Turns out this is the last time they're going to play there. It was a tough win, but it's about to get a lot tougher for the Aggies. They host undefeated and 9th-ranked Missouri. And this is one of the 3 games, actually, that I think is a Separation Saturday game, especially for the Aggies. They're in a really, really delicate spot on offense. The defense is great. But guess what? We don't know, according to Mike Elko, we don't know who the starter is at quarterback. It's either Marcel Reed or Connor Wiegman. A&M is running the ball at more than 65% of all the snaps. Missouri and A&M are really, really good defenses, 2 of the best in the SEC. Missouri opens as a 2.5-point favorite. Huge game for both. In fact, we're going to talk a lot about this, in particular the quarterback decision, because this is Mike Elko's first huge, underlining huge decision at A&M. And number 1 is Texas. They are now the number 2 team in the country. They didn't play well against a bad Mississippi State team. They beat them by double digits. A lot of us thought it'd be worse, but you know, they were probably due for a bad outing. They now get a week off. Their schedule is amazingly simple. They get a week off before they play Oklahoma and Dallas. Then they host Georgia. And so from here on out, it's going to be about Quinn Ewers and his health. He did not play against Mississippi State. We don't know if that means that he's injured, has been injured that badly, or Texas did the wise thing and just put him on the shelf to give Arch Manning a few snaps. I think that's probably the case. Most people seem to indicate that he's doing pretty well. So we'll see. But it's about him the rest of the way. It's his job. It's his ball now. About Separation Saturday, let me explain this, because I think there are, I mean, there might be only two or three other weekends of the year that you find this. So Separation Saturday for the Texas-based teams, that's going to be SMU at Louisville. That's going to be Tech at Arizona, and A&M hosting Missouri. We're about to learn a lot about all three. In SMU's case, a loss would probably knock them out of contention, probably knock them out of contention for the ACC, probably knock them out of contention for a Big 12, I mean, a championship berth, a tournament berth. I know it sounds crazy, but you know, one loss SMU team, it could win the ACC. So here we go. We're going to learn a lot. Can Tech be good on the road? We're about to find that out. They traveled once and were blown out by Washington State. We're also going to learn, is this SMU offense this good, or is TCU and Florida State that bad? SMU made a huge statement with a blowout of Florida State. Now they got a really, really tough game at Louisville. A&M, okay, third part of the Separation Saturday. A&M hosts a really good Missouri team. Mike Elko, and this is a real focus of conversation now, and it should be, he's got a tough call. And I think you could argue whatever call that he makes for Saturday hosting Missouri is the path forward for the rest of the year. Or if it doesn't work on Saturday, you've got chaos for a while. A&M's not scoring, but they're winning. I think a lot of Aggie fans know that. They're winning. They're just not scoring. They're 11th in the SEC in total offense. They're 13th in scoring. They beat Arkansas by only scoring 21 points. You know, that's good and bad. One, your offense is struggling. Two, your defense is that good. So running the ball more than 65% of the time with Marcel Reed at quarterback, he's now won three in a row. So here we go. The question Mike Elko faces. Former starter Connor Wiegman is the better passer. They thought that was their guy going forward. That's a guy with NFL talent. He's injured a shoulder. He's 0-1 in his one full game. And that loss against Notre Dame at Kyle Field. So what do you do? You've now won three with Marcel Reed at quarterback. He averages himself. He averages more than 62 yards a game. You know, if A&M wants to stay in the hunt for one, a run at the SEC, or two, a run at the 12-team playoff, this is almost a must-win for A&M. It's that separation thing I'm talking about. Mike Elko has not named the starter. And he's now said that it will be a game time decision. Then he added, I have not heard a coach do this before. I'm not quite sure I get the psychology behind it. Maybe the psychology is to try to get Marcel Reed to play better or be looking over his shoulder. I'm not quite sure. So he said, hey, it's a game time decision, Marcel Reed or Connor Wiegman. And then he followed up with this, quote, people who know me know that this will be a game time decision the rest of the year. Wait, what? Okay, that's weird. I find that hard to believe, and I'm not quite sure that's a good path forward. So that's just too much. There's got to be some psychology to that. Here's the thing. Marcel Reed, to me at least, maybe you hear differently, sounds like he thinks he's the starter, and it sounds like he expects to play.
Yeah, Marcel, you got three starts down now. You know, it just how have you seen your game progress over the last 3 weeks and how the offense has come along with you being the guy back there?
Yeah, just adjusting to the speed of the game. You know, it gets different every team we play. You know, we get different coverages, different blitzes, stuff like that. So, I mean, everybody has to adapt. But, you know, me being this being my third start, it's definitely been a fast-paced change for me. But I'm getting the hang of things, and my teammates trust me, so, you know, we're getting wins, and that's all we can ask for.
We'll go front row on the right side to Brent.
Marcel, is there anything in particular you do to kind of work on the deep ball, you know, during the week in terms of you know, ideally kind of improving those numbers as you go?
Yeah, I try my best to work on the deep ball and, you know, put them in the right place for, you know, certain receivers. A lot of receivers track balls differently, and then a lot of people want the ball in different places just by size or speed, stuff like that. And then, I mean, a lot of people don't really know. I mean, things change in the game. You know, when you get pressure, you got something in your face, you got to move around, stuff like that. The ball's not always going to be perfect. So, I mean, I try my best to put it in the place where they can get the ball. But it's something I got to work on for sure.
What is your relationship with some of these more veteran quarterbacks, a guy like Connor, Blake Bosa, you know, on down the line, who kind of help you along the way as well as you go?
Yeah, relationship's really good. I mean, we have a great QB room. Everybody gets along just well. And we know it's friendly competition. Coach Elko and Coach Klein both preach that. And, you know, just going into practice, we're competing, but we're also working for each other, helping each other out each and every day.
Well, I don't know about you. That sounds like the starter to me. That news conference sounds like that's the starter. The questions and the media were acting as if that was the starter, which I don't know if there's an argument against him not starting. So I'll caution everyone to say not to assume, but if Mike Elko does go with Marcell Reed again, and I think he has to, I really don't see an argument against. And he gets another win. If they were to beat Missouri at home, it's a huge win. I don't care how low the scoring is. I don't care how ugly you might think the game is. A win is a win, especially against a ninth-ranked Missouri team. It's a big win. The Aggies, I think this is your guy going forward. I think it has to be your guy going forward. And that's not just this year. That might be your guy going forward for a couple of years. You can't, my argument is you can't beat a top 10 team and then lose your job. At that point, by Saturday evening, he would have been 4-0 and just knocked off the ninth-ranked team in the country. Even, this is funny, even the Missouri coach, Eli Drinkwitz, he was pretty straightforward. He was asked about it. Yeah, usually coaches do that coach speak thing where they, you know, they sort of throw out just a bunch of cliches. Missouri coach Eli Drinkwitz said this. He believes Marcell Reed will get the start. I do. I think it's risky on every level not to go with him. Yeah. Okay. Missouri coach, I agree. I think that's the path forward. It's interesting to see the psychology. But huge game, huge separation game, and a really defining early decision in Mike Elko's career at A&M. It's his first, clearly his first big decision at A&M. All right, next up, let's do this. Let's talk about what could be the hottest team in Texas. And the top of the leaderboard of the Big 12. It's just weird. It's nothing anyone could have expected. It's game day. I'm Jeff Ward.
Game Day with Jeff Ward on News Radio 1080 KRLD, powered by Uber Eats. You're listening to Game Day with Jeff Ward, powered by Uber Eats, breaking down Texas college football right here on News Radio 1080 KRLD.
I'm Jeff Ward, and this is Game Day. It's a weird start to the Big 12 season, and I don't know, maybe we could argue Dallas has the hottest team in the state, and that's SMU.
Now, so they say, powered by the Low T Center, reinventing men's healthcare.
Mac Engel is a columnist for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. You can follow him on X, that's at Mac Engel Prof. All right, Mac, at the start of the year, if you had said, maybe you did, I just didn't see it, but if you said at the beginning of the year that by October, the top of the Big 12 would be BYU, Colorado, and Texas Tech, that would be your top three. Most people would say that you need to be drug tested. So
yes,
maybe you do anyway. I don't know.
They may be saying that anyway.
Okay, but of the three, who do you think has real staying power, and which one has short shelf life?
Well, you would say probably Colorado and BYU because of the quarterbacks.
Yeah,
Colorado. If Shadur is not the best quarterback in college football right now, he's right there in the top three, along with Carson Beck at Georgia. So I would say you would say, well, Colorado, because they've got Shadur. And, you know, if you have a great quarterback, you can cover up a lot of errors, and he's done that. He's a terrific player. So that one, you would say, that would make sense. BYU is certainly most unexpected, although BYU historically will pull these kinds of seasons out every now and then because they get good players in, and they do have typically their linemen are usually a little bit older. They're usually a little bit more developed, especially if those guys have done mission trips where they are gone for 2 years and they come back and they're just older. They're older young men and they're bigger. You know, and they have a terrific quarterback in Jay Ratzlaff. Jake Ratzlaff, rather. I said the same incorrect. He's a terrific player. He's really, really good. And BYU has had quarterbacks in the past, a lot of them. I mean, that's kind of how they established their name in college football. And this guy looks like he's kind of in that same BYU quarterback mold. So those are two that you would say, if any of them are going to stick, that's why they're going to stick. But I think if you look at the league as a whole, and to me, it's one of the most appealing things about the league is that you really don't, it's completely unpredictable. Colorado should have totally lost that home game against Baylor, but they hit a Hail Mary pass and they won it in overtime. And, you know, so they're 2-0. And if I had to pick, I wouldn't, but if you gave me $50 and you said you have to bet on one of these two teams to win it or the field, I'm taking the field every day of the week in this conference.
Yeah, that's interesting. So back to Colorado. And I mean, we probably could have this conversation at, you know, 10 or 12 different times throughout the upcoming college and NFL season. Let's just say, for example, because I think you're right. I think Shedeur Sanders is the best quarterback in the game right now. He's the best NFL prospect in the game right now. And Travis Hunter is not just the best player overall in the sport today. He might be the best player in the sport of the past 10 or 15 years. But let's say that you're right in Colorado just because of those two guys, right? Nobody can match up with those two guys. Let's say they win 7 games this year, which I think is pretty impressive given they're terrible in the offensive line, their defense is suspect. If you had to make a prediction for next year, is Deion Sanders coaching at Colorado if they win 7? If they win 6 or 7, I mean, maybe even just scale that down to 6. They win 6 or 7, is he coaching there next year? And then if not, could he be working for an old man in Dallas?
No, he's not going to coach in the NFL. He can't coach in the NFL. He knows that. He can't. Those guys will... First of all, a lot of those guys don't know who he is, and they don't care. They, you know, that this whole generation, they don't know him as a player. Sports fame is generational, and he's a great player. He's one of the top defensive players in the history of the game. I mean, his resume speaks for itself. But typically college coaches that go to the pros, it doesn't translate. We've seen that time and time again. Now, there are outliers. You know, certainly Jimmy Johnson was the mothership of outliers. But what happened to Urban Meyer, Chip Kelly? And Deion's a different breed. I mean, he's just a completely different animal. But the only other job that I could see him potentially going to is Florida State. And, I don't know what's going to happen to Mike Norvell there. I mean, you know, that school's got all kinds of challenges. And their future in the ACC is really uncertain. But I think one of the challenges, and I talked to an administrator about this, about potentially hiring Deion, is that you have to yield everything to him. And because there's a lot of visibility that comes with him that's good, but a lot of it can be a very sharp, double-edged sword if things don't go right. And so you have to be okay with that scenario, and you understand it's one thing to sit there and say, oh, okay, I'm okay with this. Well, it's one thing to agree to it. It's another thing to live it when you're actually dealing with it. So Colorado has given him carte blanche, and I think they'll probably let him stay with it. I think he's going to stay there because I don't know if anybody else really wants to deal with it.
Yeah.
And that's a lot. And people will give up a lot to deal with a winning football coach, but I mean, we're still, if you want to take the cynical view of this, okay, what's he going to do once Travis Hunter is gone and Shedeur is gone? Now what are you doing? Because this is about paying kids. And I don't know if Colorado has the kind of money to pay top players the way they do at SEC and even other Big 12 schools and Big 10 schools. I don't know. And that ultimately will be his that when this doesn't work, and eventually it won't because it eventually fails everywhere. But eventually that will be his out. He will sit there and say, well, we didn't have the kind of commitment necessary and blah, blah, blah. But I do think right now, if I was a betting man, A, I don't think they'll win the league. B, I think he will be there next year.
Mike Angles with the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. He's a columnist. You know, before you came on, I teased, is SMU the hottest team in the state? All of a sudden, as you just laid out, that loss to BYU at home by 3 doesn't look so awful. I don't know. Is SMU that good or is TCU and Florida State that bad?
Florida State's that bad. Yeah. They've mailed it in, right?
They've said
yeah,
that's
it. I think that they are what can happen when you have a team in this era of NIL and transfer portal. If you get off to a bad start, guys are going to quit. Guys are going to say, I'm not going to play the rest of the season to save my red shirt. And you're going to see seasons go sideways and south fast. Because Florida State coming into the season, remember last year, they were the team that got screwed out of the playoff, right? And then the whole team basically avoided the Orange Bowl against Georgia. Georgia blows out Florida State worse than they blew out TCU in the championship game the year before. Florida State gets a new quarterback. They start the season on the road in Ireland with a horrible loss to Georgia Tech. And now it's gone. They weren't that good. The quarterback's not that good. Now he's hurt. They go to SMU. They get killed. SMU's pretty good. They really are. And the fact that they've changed quarterbacks, that kid's pretty good. SMU's pretty good. They're going to have some losses coming up just because that's the way it goes. But SMU's pretty good, and they should – that administration and those boosters should be given a lot of credit for making this happen because they had to spend a fortune to see this through, and having a winning football team is the benefit, and they're winning, and they're good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to figure out their long. I mean, is there long term future there? I mean, I don't think they. Maybe you disagree. I don't think they win the ACC this year. I don't think they can catch Miami. But I'm starting to wonder if this platform of SMU. I mean, this was not it's not a fluke. They were really good a year ago. I don't think people noticed. Is there a chance in a few years somebody says SMU wins the ACC?
If your day sounds like
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through, you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Sure. I think in that league.
Yeah.
I just don't know what it's going to look like in a few years. I don't. Does the Big 12 pick off a couple of ACC schools? Does the Big 10 pick off a couple of ACC schools? Or do these leagues, do the SEC and Big 10 say, you know what, let's just stay where we are for right now. And there's a lot of talent there, and money will buy anything. We saw it back in the 80s. SMU, with its size, has no business, from a size standpoint, being competitive as Florida State. But it has a handful of exceptionally wealthy boosters and alums that want to see this happen. And it'll give you a chance to be competitive. I was teaching there a year ago or two, and I remember some of the students asked me if I really thought that SMU could be in a power league. And my answer was, don't rule it out. I said, if you had said to me back in 1996 that TCU would be where it is today, I would have laughed in your face. There's no way. I was like, there's no way. Well, with that as a precedent, I would rule out nothing, especially with a university that is willing to forego 8 years worth of media rights shares in order to be part of the ACC. I'm like, if they're willing to do that, and they're basically giving you money to be a partner, I'm like, don't rule anything out.
Yeah.
So they're there. And if you look at the other members of the ACC right now and you can get players, I could see SMU being at the top of the league.
Yeah. So that begs to ask a question. I mean, is it in their best interest to stay in the ACC, knowing that a lot of people just can't keep up financially and that they might have some real, they might have some real power in that league? Or does the Big 12 or has the Big 12 said, hey, you guys are, you've got deep pockets. We'd love to have you for the long term. Well, what's a better play for SMU?
SMU's best play is just being in a power league. That's it. The Big 12 doesn't want them because they don't need them. The Big 12 already has enough small Texas schools. They don't need another one. Texas Tech has more alums than TCU and SMU combined, I think. And the problem, SMU's problem, is the same one that TCU has, which is the school is just too small. That's what you want to be. If you're SMU, your point of sale is small, private, exclusive, one-on-one education. That's what you're selling. It had that, but it didn't have power sports attached to it. There were only a small number of schools that could make that claim. Stanford, Northwestern, Baylor, TCU, Vanderbilt, Duke, Wake Forest, maybe Miami. Syracuse and USC are private schools, but they're really, really big. The other ones are all really, really small. And so TCU had this competitive edge against SMU that it was small, private, one-on-one, exclusive education with big-time sports. Well, now SMU can boast that, but you can't be what you're not. You aren't and don't want to be a big power state school where you where the kid knows and the parent knows, I'm just a number and I'm going to get lost in a classroom full of 500 other kids. So SMU can do all of this, but it is basically a landlocked university, not literally, but there are a lot of challenges there. And it can only be so big. And when you have those realities to juggle, there are a lot of strengths. But when it comes to power athletics, there are limitations too. And those are the realities for those very, very small number of select schools.
Those are good points. Mac, as always, good talking to you, man. Thanks for doing this.
Anytime.
You bet. All right, next up, I think it's obvious, but is the Heisman Trophy favorite in the Big 12? I'm Jeff Ward, and this is Game Day.
Game Day with Jeff Ward on News Radio 1080 KRLD, powered by Uber Eats. Game Day with Jeff Ward, where Texas college football goes under the lights. On News Radio 1080 KRLD.
I'm Jeff Ward, and this is Game Day. Is the Heisman Trophy favorite playing in the Big 12, or is the Heisman Trophy favorite playing quarterback at Texas, or soon to start back playing quarterback at Texas? Let's talk about the Heisman Trophy. Cedric Golden is a longtime columnist for the Austin American Statesman. You can follow him on X at Ced Golden. You're also a Heisman voter, so is the more likely Heisman winner playing in the Big 12, i.e. at Colorado, or a guy that's been on the shelf playing quarterback at Texas?
It's not Quinn Ewers. It's just not. He doesn't have the numbers, and he's gonna have to get a signature moment. And he'll have ample opportunities, Jeff, these next couple of games, Oklahoma and Georgia. I expect him to be back in the lineup. Travis Hunter's the best player in college football. It's not even close.
Yeah.
I mean, are we talking, you know, I know we're talking about the Heisman Trophy, which is largely a quarterback's award. Charles Woodson was the last defensive back to win it. But it is Travis Hunter, and I know Colorado's not great, but they are having a much better season than last year. He's not only the most electric player in the game. I can't decide if he's a better receiver or a better cornerback. He's great at both.
Yeah.
And easily, Jeff, the most well-conditioned athlete, college football player maybe that I've ever seen. He doesn't come off the field.
Yeah.
Who plays over 100 snaps a game? No one. Travis Hunter is the only one. And it's really ironic, you know. Deion Sanders was a great cornerback, an all-time great, a Hall of Famer, and he always dabbled on offense. You know, Jimmy Johnson would put him in the game. He caught a couple of touchdowns from Troy Aikman, but it was a little play thing. Travis Hunter is actually a weapon, a player that they have to game plan against when he's playing receiver. I think it's the damnedest thing I've ever seen. And the fact that he can do this on a Power 5 level and not seem to get tired and still cover the other team's best receiver, because we agree, Jeff, the best athletes on the field are the receivers, followed very closely by the cornerbacks. He's both. And I would love to see him win the award because he's put in the work. You cannot half-ass full-time football player. The work he must have put in the offseason, in conditioning and in the weight room, is phenomenal. He's got a great career as a physical trainer. Football doesn't work out.
Yeah, I tell people, if you know, you don't have to be a stat nerd, just spend a few minutes and take a look at his stat line, because it wasn't, it may have been last week, the dude, he had 8 or 10 catches and he had 5 tackles and he intercepted a pass and broke, you know, I mean, it's just a, they're absurd statistics. And it's not like he's on a very good team. I mean, he's having to do everything, which begs to ask the question, okay, Colorado wins 4 games. I don't know if you're surprised by that, but I am. But they also had to have a last second Hail Mary to tie Baylor. So, you know, let's not get over our skis. Let's say they fall on their face and, you know, they end up being a 4 or 5 win team. Does he still win the Heisman Trophy in that case?
I don't know that he does. And I'm on the fence of who I'm going to vote for. I always decide from Thanksgiving weekend, you know, because our votes are due like a week or two later after that. I want to see a full schedule. It doesn't help when you play for a bad team. And so if they make a bowl game, they win 6 or 7 games, that makes them one of the most improved teams in the country. They're going to be in a bowl game. He's going to have some more moments, and that's going to lend credence to the Heisman voters. For some reason, I know it's not always fair to the player, Jeff, but you have to have some success on the field. You can't be a great player on a crappy team. It just doesn't work that way. But if they can somehow get to a bowl game, and then Prime can get some more national exposure for his program, and then the voters can get some more eyeballs on Travis Hunter, then I believe that Travis Hunter will, at the very minimum, have to rent a tux and end up in New York City. Well, whether he wins it or not, I still think that that the odds are probably against him, because it's such a quarterback award. I mean, only one running back's won it in like 10 years, and that was Derrick Henry. And maybe 2 receivers. I think Devontae Smith was the last receiver to win it. But after that, it's been quarterbacks all the time.
Okay, well then let's flip it around and say, you know, Quinn Ewers, who hasn't played in a few weeks, he goes to Dallas and Texas lights up a pretty suspect Oklahoma team. Then he turns around and plays a marquee game, less marquee now since Alabama beat Georgia, but it might be a tired Georgia team. Texas beats Georgia, and he has a really good outing there, and then they've got a fairly easy schedule the rest of the way. He just puts up grotesque numbers. And Colorado wins 5 games. Is Quinn Ewers the favorite?
He's in there then. Yeah. He's in there. Heisman trophies are all about moments. And if we're talking about moments, Jalen Milroe went up the chart this past week with that last gasp win over Georgia. He's completing 73% of his passes. He's not the confused little kid that Texas exposed in Tuscaloosa last year. He's grown into the position. And so it's about moments. And he went up the chart. Boise State has a running back, Ashton Junte. He's not going to win the Heisman Trophy, but he's averaging 10 yards a carry.
I know. It's crazy.
It's crazy.
It is.
He might not win the Heisman, but he's going to make a lot of money in the NFL.
Yeah, so this guy, he's on track to have, is it 2,200 yards in a season or something just insane?
Yeah, he's approached 900 yards already. And I think it's like 5 games. So, he's nuts. And he's averaging, Jeff, I saw this stat that just stupid. He's averaging 15.3 yards a carry in the fourth quarter. I mean, he is, you talk about a closer. I mean, that's some Goose Gossage stuff.
Yeah.
So for me, I don't think he'll win it. He's not in a Power 5 conference. This is a award that's usually given to the big boys, someone that plays for Power 4. And so, I think that it's a great story. But it's going to be Travis Hunter. If he can continue to do this, he might not be denied. I think Quinn Ewers has a great chance to get back in the race. He's not in the race right now, Jeff. He's not in the race right now. But if he beats Oklahoma and Georgia, and let's just say he throws 6 touchdowns and 1 pick in these next 2 games, and the Texas Longhorns are sitting at 7-0, and they've already played their 2 toughest games, And if he can stay healthy, he's going to be in New York. But and he's not one of those guys that puts up grotesque numbers. He had 22 touchdowns, 6 picks last year, missed 2 games. He's got to get that thing up to about 27, 28 touchdowns. I can't remember. Jaden Daniels was up around 40 touchdown passes last year.
I can't remember a Heisman winner ever missing 3 games.
Yeah, I can't either. Yeah. I can't either. So he's got to stay healthy. He's got to put up big numbers, and the Longhorns have to win. So I wrote this last week. I hope that Sarkisian isn't chasing. He's obviously not chasing Heisman numbers, or else he would have played Quinn Ewers last week, because I think Quinn could have played last week. I mean, probably would have lit up Mississippi State, but he did the smart thing by keeping him out. And Quinn himself said at the beginning of the year, if you win games, then those individual accolades will come after that. This might not be a Heisman year for Quinn, but if they win the championship, who cares, man? That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
And being projected as a top 10 pick, he's got some making up to do. He's got to show these scouts that he can stay healthy, Jeff. That's a big deal for them.
All right, Sed, great stuff as always, man. Good talking to you.
Okay, brother. Take care.
All right, next up, let's talk about who's under pressure. Hello, Aggies. SMU Tech. I'll also pick some games, too. I'm Jeff Ward, and this is Game Day.
Game Day with Jeff Ward on News Radio 1080 KRLD, powered by Uber Eats. This is Game Day with Jeff Ward, powered by Uber Eats on News Radio 1080 KRLD.
I'm Jeff Ward, and this is Game Day. What coaches, players, or teams are under the most pressure this weekend? There's a lot to spread around. Here we go.
Now, Under Pressure, powered by Sampec 5-Star Ford, North Richland Hills.
First up, Texas Tech. 2 wins in a row for Tech. They're now 2-0 in the Big 12. Yeah, I know. They always make this list. It just seems like every week there's a season-changing game, and here we go again. The talent is there for Tech, but their last road game was a total disaster. They were blown out by Washington State. They go on the road this weekend. They play Arizona at, get this, 10 o'clock at night. A win for Tech, and the buzz will be about them. I don't know if you're going to say it's true or not, but the buzz is going to be they might win the league. It might not end up being true, but it's going to be said more than once if they win a big game on the road. This road game against Arizona will tell you. You're going to know by Sunday morning. You'll know if this team, this Tech team, is a legitimate contender. Next up, under pressure, SMU. Very much so. Their toughest game of the year, most likely, at least during the regular season. A win here, and SMU makes real noise in the ACC. This is a talented offense. I mean, they are just lighting it up the past couple of weeks. They're at number 22, Louisville. And can SMU win the ACC? Probably not. But I tell you what, a win here gives them a real chance. This game, it's going to sound like an exaggeration, but you just feel like they keep making ground, getting more publicity. They're talked about more often. This game on the road at Louisville with an easy schedule the rest of the way, I'm going to say it. It is almost a program maker. I think this game takes them to a different level. Yes, I said program maker. I guess we should say with SMU, a program maker again. Under pressure. Yeah, this one's got 2 parts, maybe even 3. But first part is this. Under pressure was Texas A&M head coach Mike Elko. He's the one that's inviting pressure by saying the starting quarterback job is a game time decision. He's the one who poured gas on that even further and said it's a game time decision every single week of the season. So if you want to push back and say he's under no pressure, I get that he's playing with house money since it's his first year. But this quarterback thing is he's the one inviting this now. It should have been made. The decision should have been made, in my opinion. It should have been made already. And the guy that's won 3 games in a row should be the starter. So Mike Elko has invited the scrutiny, and it's here. And it's going to be this weekend in a big, big way. If he chooses to go back to Connor Wigman at quarterback, the pressure goes 10x. It had better work. If he does. I don't think that he will, but if that's the direction he goes, that had better work. The quarterback spot has to be decided. Now, I know people would argue and say, well, Jeff, somebody's going to win the job. True. But they got a guy that's won three in a row. The A&M offense is clunky, and that's probably being generous, but they do keep winning games. Their defense needs some help this weekend against a number nine Missouri team. It's a huge game for Mike Elko in this quarterback situation. It's not quite chaos because they've won three already with one guy, but something needs to be done. Somebody needs to grab the job. I think Elko needs to make it clear that's his job. Under pressure, part two of this equation. Texas A&M quarterback Marcel Reed, who, or I guess I should say Connor Wiegman, whoever is the starter, the pressure is on and it's 10X. This is Marcel Reed's chance to take the job and own it. Somebody has to. This is his real chance. If he starts and wins, Mike Elko has to say on Monday, this is my guy. This is the path forward. It seems obvious, but I think he needs to say it publicly. Monday is the chance with a win on Saturday. If for some reason Mike Elko decides to go with Connor Wiegman, you know, the same story applies. A&M gets a win here. That quarterback needs to start the next week, and they're off and running. It's a good team and a clunky offense. They just find a way to win. So it's an offense that is 13th in scoring. If A&M loses and the quarterback position is sketchy, it's a nightmare setup for Mike Elko going forward. What are you going to do? When are you going to do it? Who's going to take over that job? Big opportunity for either player and Elko this weekend against Missouri. Last thing, if he does go back to Connor Wiegman and they end up losing or don't play well on offense, you know, then the question is, at what point during the game do you pull him? At what point do you go to the bullpen? And, you know, what kind of headspace is Marcel Reed going to be in if he doesn't get the starting job after winning three in a row? I mean, it's really interesting and compelling. I just think that A&M defense is good enough. If they can find a way to get some good offense, they win.
Now, by the numbers, powered by Classic Chevrolet.
All right, let's do the last thing. I'll pick some games. Yes, these are games against the spread, so no wagering, we like to clarify, unless it's among family members. I think I was 4-1. No, I think I was 3-2 last week. Texas didn't cover, and somehow, someway, Texas State lost to Sam Houston. All right, 3-2 last week. Here we go. Texas Tech is a 6-point underdog on the road against Arizona. It would be really cool if they could pull this off, but I don't trust them on the road yet. Yet. It's a 10 p.m. kick. I'm going to go ahead and take Arizona to cover that. I'd love to be wrong. Until proven otherwise, though, I'll take the home team against Tech practically every time. TCU is favored by 16.5, according to DraftKings. They play Houston, and I'll take them. And I have no idea how it is the Houston program is so bad at this time. It's just a mystery. TCU probably wins that one easy. Texas State, who I think should be fighting mad, they shouldn't be losing to Sam Houston State. They're favored by 13 over Troy. That's a road game on a Thursday. They should be angry after losing last week to Sam Houston State. So, you know what? I'll take Texas State to cover. Then you get to SMU. Now, this is a fascinating game. SMU is a 7-point underdog to Louisville on the road. And it's a huge game for SMU. And I think they cover. I do. I think their offense is on fire. They scored 66 against TCU. Turnaround scored 42 against Florida State. It's a really, really good offense. If their defense can hang on and play well enough, I kind of like them in this game. They're a 7-point underdog. Would they win outright? I don't know, but I think they can keep it close. So I take SMU to cover the 7 points against Louisville. Then it's an early kick for A&M and Missouri. The Aggies, say this about Kyle Field, it's got to be worth, I guess the odds makers make Kyle Field worth 3 or 4 points at least. It must be. The Aggies are favored by 2 against the 9th-ranked team in the country at Kyle Field. That is a surprising line. It really is. But I think that's because they're at home and the odds makers think that much of Kyle Field. It's Missouri, though. Here's the thing with Missouri. Missouri has an amazingly easy schedule. They've got a schedule set up even easier than Texas's in the SEC. They struggled, though, against Vanderbilt. I guess the odds makers just don't trust them yet. Man, this one's tough. It's a giant game for both. And I'll tell you why it's giant for Missouri. Because their schedule is so weak, and their name is Missouri, I don't think that committee likes them with one or two losses. So an A&M loss here, and I think it might just knock them out of the playoff. Because that schedule is just not tough enough to justify putting them in. So I think it's huge for Missouri. I think more pressure is even on Missouri because they just don't have very many quality opponents except for this one. This would be Mike Elko's first big win. I think that's pretty obvious. If he can get his offense going at all, put up some numbers at all, he gets his first win. Unfortunately, though, I think I'll have to take Missouri. Until that A&M offense proves otherwise, I'm probably going to take Missouri here. It's probably going to be low scoring, obviously. I think it looks a lot like the A&M game with Arkansas. I think it's close no matter what. A&M will find a way to keep it close. But there's too much for Missouri right now. I don't know that we can trust A&M enough at this point. It's interesting, though, right? Texas doesn't play this week, and then they turn around and play Oklahoma. They'll be a double-digit favorite in that game. I can tell you that right now and make the prediction. So, big pressure weekend, huge decisions for Mike Elko and A&M, SMU with a giant road game, Texas Tech with a giant road game. It's set up pretty nice. We're starting to get in that point of the year when these games start to separate. That's why I use the term Separation Saturday for several programs, because we're there. All right, that's it for Game Day. I'm Jeff Ward. We'll do it again next week.
Game Day with Jeff Ward on News Radio 1080 KRLD, powered by Uber Eats.